Hello and welcome for the final time this season to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham and we are calling out all around the world in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Well, the season ended with a bit of a whimper at Anfield on Sunday, but overall we can look back at our first season back at the top table with a degree of satisfaction. Our 15th place finish is our second highest finish at this level and our highest in the football pyramid since 1981-82. We've come a long way since 1997, eh? Also this week, Steve Sidwell and former Raw guest Liam Rossignol have announced their departures from the club. But one person who is definitely staying is the gaffer, as Chris Hughton, who has penned a new three-year deal. In last Friday's Renf game, despite Peter Ward scoring his first goal in open play in the Renf season, the Albion side went down 3-2 to a very good Palace team, it has to be said. Also last Saturday, the under-23 won their playoff at Villa Park and thus completes the set of Albion teams that will be competing at top level.
Are you doing the season review in one hit?
Yeah, pretty much. That was, of course, the appalling voice of Alan Wares, and we're delighted to welcome back journalist and author of the fabulous book Brighton Up, and he's now releasing a new book called Brighton Still Up, maybe. It's Nick Trepanic, and we're also delighted to welcome back another brilliant journalist who's been documenting this season and many others, of course. It's Brian Owen.
Yeah.
What a panel. What a panel.
Thank you,
AD. Two wonderful scribes and a crayonist.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, well,
And then there's yourself.
I know I look like a crayon.
Hello, AD.
It's me.
Right, what have you got for us today? We're going to talk about this season then.
Yeah, I mean, it's... How do we look back on that?
I think probably the best way to look back on it is let's start with this time last year, because Nick was in the studio at the time. By the way, if you can hear some racket in the background, it really isn't us. It's just that to show we are live and part of the festival, the people in the open market aren't shutting up. So if you hear some noise, it's not interference. Nick, this time last year, we asked you a question: what do Brighton need to do in order to survive and thrive in the Premier League? And you came up with your answer. And how do you think,
what did I say?
It was along the lines we needed more pace in midfield.
Yeah, I'm not sure we actually got that. David Proper was a great addition, but is he that fast? I don't know. I think that the problem is that the central midfield sits back quite a lot. We got pace on the left of midfield in Izquierdo, no doubt about that. I think the transfer window was a great success when you think that we got four major new pieces, you know, four out of the 11 of the regular team, and all played most of the games. I think that made it a phenomenally successful season. And we got pace down the other side with Scalotto, but he's been a bit of a mixed bag, I think we'll agree.
Hmm. He is. I mean, Brian, I think we can look at the season pretty much in two halves, really. You've got the first half where... Chris was very pragmatic, and there was very much a safety first way of playing. And then just around Christmas time, so the brakes came off a little bit, and we started to be a little bit more expansive. Is that fair?
Yeah, possibly. That's not really how I've thought of it, to be honest. It seemed to be those patches where it was so difficult, then they got that momentum, then it was so difficult again. Nick talking there about Izquierdo, I think what they've brought in is those players with just that moment of quality, basically, for all the 90 minutes of organisation, very worthy defensive work, discipline, etc, etc. You look back at moments like Izquierdo's curler against West Ham, what an important moment that was. Yeah, but I'm thinking about the one when it was 1-1 at home and Brighton really needed a win and they'd been pegged back and the game could have gone either way, and then all of a sudden that moment of magic, which I think is why it was goal of the season. So I look back at it on that, and those sort of good patches, bad patches, and 2 months without a win, and we all thought we were going to get back into possibly trouble again. So I'd say more that than as... I didn't really think of it as a season of two halves, I must say.
We're talking about consistently and consistently. I mean, Brian's point about the patches is absolutely right. Yes, it was defeats, then wins, then defeats, and getting points where we weren't expecting them. I mean, which is actually, I think, covenant of improvement on the consideration of a lot of people saying at the beginning of the season. There were some, and I include myself here, who feared a Derby County season. You know, just thought, right, let's rash up the millions and then rebuild next season. But I mean, the point about the whole thing is forever for the club to be moving forwards and onwards and upwards. When it got to the first two games of the season, we realised, oh, hang on, we're a bit out of our depth here. We're not playing as well as we could. I think that even though the Watford game, we came out of that with a point thinking we should have had three. The fact that it was our first game when we come out of it thinking we should have had three, we think there is something, we can get this, we can do this. I think there needs to be a bit of belief, not just from the players, which I'm sure was there, but certainly from the fans, transmitting that to the players. And when it eventually did happen, when we got our first win against West Brom, which we didn't know what sort of season West Brom was going to have, but then I suppose if you got Pardew there, then
the writing's always going to go. They won their first two games.
I think, I think everybody thought then it was a better win than it turned out. Like, I think you're absolutely right, Al.
I thought that was still under Pulis.
Beating
then,
a top 10 team there, they're going to be hard to beat, and Brighton have scored three. Well,
yeah, exactly. But then you realise what a mess they were.
The important thing we did in that game was we got the second goal. And I think quite a lot of the time, especially in the first half of the season, with those draws at the Amex, is the failure to get the second goal. And, you know, I think Chris Hughton's been talking towards the end of the season, I'm sort of jumping ahead a bit here, but he's talking about saying, well, I'm not sure if we're going to sign, you know, any more forwards. But I think that might be wrong. I think it wasn't, you know, that we gave goals away. It's that we gave goals away at the last minute that cost us points because we hadn't got the second goal and then possibly the third goal. So I still think, you know, that the safety first is all very well. But you know, if you're a team that can guarantee not to give away the late equaliser, but I don't think there's any such team in the world.
Everton at home springs to mind.
Exactly, Bruno's.
Yeah. Well, Stoke away.
Yes.
Had some great chances. David Proper. Yes. How he hasn't scored this season.
Well, I mean, I've got a school report here and all of the players here.
What's your overall mark? Tell us your overall mark and then tell us the report.
Well, for the squad as a whole, I would probably mark it down as a 6, must try harder. but which is probably being a little bit harsh.
I think it's easier to...
I mean, that's the sum of it. I mean, obviously, you've got to look at...
That's what you can do in hindsight, isn't it?
Yeah.
You think, well, there's games where, as Nick said, where we could have got points and you know, held on and things like that. But there's other games where you think, oh, that was definitely a point gained.
But looking over the squad, I mean, there's players that have made the step up to the Premier League with absolute ease, like Lewis Dunk, and there's other players that you think could have really stepped up to the plate a little bit more, like perhaps Solly March. He started the season very well, but he tailed off.
Well, let's go through this player by. Have you got this player by player rather than match by match?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I've got the school report. Defence.
Go on then, headmaster.
I mean, we start in goal with Matty Ryan. He didn't start brilliantly. He admits himself that. He had to sit. There's a mental aptitude. What the mental aptitude coach in Australia is it?
Yeah. Well, he's actually he's done an interview this week where he talks about just that, and he's talked about it several times over. I think he's going into the World Cup with Australia with a better mental attitude. I mean, when you're playing for Valencia, themselves no spring chickens, and you get turned over 7-0 by Barcelona, and he feels that, and goalkeepers are just plain odd anyway, that he feels so much, takes so much blame for that particular defeat. But we are talking about Suarez and Messi, who have actually was sort of taken the mick out of him the whole game. It affects your confidence. So by the time he gets here, if you're going to make mistakes, get them out of the way early, and I think that's what he's done. He hasn't done it. He hasn't dropped rickets for me at vital times. In fact, quite the opposite. I think he's actually stepped up to the plate at vital times.
I mean, Brian, I mean, the true test or measure of a goalkeeper is when you look at it at the end of the season is how many points have they saved you?
That's what he was talking about. That thing's on our back page today as well, that he thinks he saved them points this season. That could have been, I mean, it didn't save them points, but that could have easily been 7 at Anfield with that. And the one Al's talking about, no costly mistakes, whatever, I can think of one that he made and he got away with it at home to Watford with the last kick of the game. But other than that, he has. I mean, it wasn't a penalty at Stoke, but when it was given, what a save that was. And the various moments. So he's pleased with himself. I think we should all be pleased with him.
You know, for the fact is that, and we've had this discussion many times on the road about the fact that he's still, you're convinced he's about 5'4", but, you know, he's nearly...
Well, that hasn't cost, I think it possibly cost the first goal at against Tottenham at Wembley. I think a taller goalkeeper with more reach just might have got to that. But
really?
I just can't think of many other things where, you know, he's come and claimed high balls. He doesn't seem to be intimidated by that, so I think that hasn't been a factor.
They defend in a certain way as well, not Duncan Duffy, like, are they top of the headed clearances or something?
Now, is that a good stat or is that a bad stat?
Because which means that we've allowed a lot of crosses to come in.
Yeah, yeah.
And people were saying, how is it that Dunk has made all these blocks and interceptions and yet he's not in the England squad? Well, perhaps there have been people are just as good but haven't been playing behind, you know, midfields or other teams that have left them under so much pressure. So it's a mixed bag of a stat. I mean, the fact they've done well to deal with all those header situations is good, but the fact that they've had so much to do is not very promising, I don't think.
But again, that's Houghton hedging his bets, isn't he? He knows that we have strength of the centre-back areas. I mean, it's not to say that the full-backs or the wingers getting back aren't doing their job. I mean, a lot of times they do stop the crosses, but when they do come in, you know, knowing full well that Duffy or Dunk can actually head away, and then you'd like to think the likes of Stevens or whoever's come back, even Gross has come back, to mop up the pieces. And that's where a counter-attack, and that's where you can see a pattern emerges. The cross comes in, it gets headed away, and you're hoping, and sometimes it's hope rather than expectation, that one of our midfield players picks it up, and with that you then got Knockhart, Herringway, that you can see he's told exactly right, okay, Gross has got it, Knockhart, on your bike, son, you know, and off he goes up the pitch with the ball. And it's not uncommon that, you know.
But I mean, with someone like Matty Ryan, who, I mean, I hold my hands up, I had question marks over him at the start of the season, and I do prefer,
I suspect he had them over himself.
Yeah, I mean, I do prefer a goalkeeper to come out and claim crosses on a regular basis, but as Brian correctly said, we don't necessarily play in that way now. But I mean, he's proved me wrong. He's ever present this season. Two penalty saves, which are crucial.
Well, the second one wasn't that crucial, was it? Because we were stuffed by Everton, weren't we?
No, but it was a very good save. But also, I mean, we've had this years, especially since Chris Hughton's been in charge, and players are questioned who are always in the team. And I was thinking, if they're always in a Chris Hughton team, there's got to be a reason for that. You know, they're obviously doing something. Even years ago when Bruno was being picked at right back and everyone in Caldwell, that was Bruno's being picked at right back. You know?
Yeah. But, I mean, can you see... I mean, there's going to be a lot of teams who will have been looking at Matt Ryan this season and those saves he's made. I mean, the one at Burnley as well, which was just absolutely mind-bendingly
brilliant. Yeah, we won't repeat what
you
said on
that. Yeah. But it's... I mean, can you see someone maybe coming to prize him away? I mean, like Liverpool were looking at him a few years ago.
No, I mean, once you're at the knowing full well there's a huge gap between, say, Brighton and the top six. And there is a kind of a couple of clubs hinterland between the top six. And I mean, it's not the top six and the bottom 14. Leicester and Burnley, I think, have kind of never bridged the gap, but they're a kind of this little thing on its own. And then there's everyone else. So if any player is going to go anywhere, to enhance their career, they're going to need to go to a top six club, and I don't think that anyone in our squad at the moment, and I do include Lewis Dunk in this, I don't think any of them are good enough to go to a top six
side. And
they're
going to want to go to play in a top six side, not just sit on the bench and play the occasional Europa League game.
Okay, did you say you think that Dunk is already good enough for a top six side?
I think he's plenty good enough. Yeah. Especially can you imagine how good he'd be under Guardiola? I mean, he would be just...
Well, anyone would be good under Guardiola, but, you know...
But, I mean, he's that ball-playing centre-back that a lot of teams have been crying out for, Arsenal in particular.
Nick?
I was quite glad when he failed to control that ball and gifted it to Rashford when they didn't score. So I was thinking, a lot of managers look at that and think, no, he's not quite ready yet, we're not going to bid the 30 million. So that was a great, great moment, because Dunk made a mistake that I think a lot of managers would look at and think, you know, I didn't like that. And we didn't give a goal away. So from a purely selfish point of view, I think there are still a few raw edges. Whether someone like Guardiola, you know, would feel they could get rid of those raw edges. But, it's, you know, I have to look at the City squad. You know, who's he going to take the place of?
True.
Otamendi, possibly.
But I mean, someone like Arsenal, I mean, Man United haven't got great centre-backs either.
Depends on
the
new Arsenal manager, doesn't it?
This is very true.
Well, okay, I was just going to say, the last thing, I think that is also, I mean, it's possibly, for me, probably the principal reason why Dunk hasn't been selected for England. He's just not ready. It's the point is, he's had one season in the Premier League, just one. And this is his first season in the Premier League. Yes, he's done very well, but as Nick says, he's still got issues to iron out. I think if he carries on making the improvements that he has been, then yes, he ought to be a pick for 2020.
But is he better than James Tarkowski? I think he is, personally.
Well,
he's not in the squad, but he's on the standby squad. And he has got an England cap to his name this season. So
I was impressed by Maguire when they came down. I know he's the only one who gets compared. So there's a couple of times where I saw Brighton were attacking down the left side of the penalty area, and he was across so quickly, read it so quickly, made a tackle. And that's that one when his kid got away in the second half, and he sort of ended up running into a cul-de-sac, and he was ushered to where Maguire wanted him, and then they blocked the shot. So I was quite impressed with him. I know it's not fashionable to
say. Also, managers look at where Burnley are in the table and think, well, look at Tarkowski, you know, he's in a team that's in the top six, and not giving goals away as we were, but perhaps giving even fewer away than we did.
Okay. Well, just the final word on the goalkeepers then, because, I mean, Tim Krul and Nicky Mempar found opportunities very hard to come by this season. Obviously, Tim did play in the cup run. You know, first FA Cup quarter final since 1986. That's nothing to be sniffed at.
Absolutely.
And but, I mean, next season, I mean, Nicky, I don't know, will Nicky stick around? Probably not. Will Krul stick around? Will Chris Walton come back?
If you're asking us a direct question, no, I don't think that Christian Walton will be sticking around. I think he'll go back out on loan. I mean, he's still only 22, and goalkeepers don't hit their peak until, you know, much, much later.
I mean, if Wigan want him back, a season in the Championship, that's all part of his development.
Absolutely.
I think the club would be very happy with that.
But let's face it, he's got a superb record against Man City.
Yeah, I was looking at that last night, actually, what they're going to do with the keepers. I think Krul would probably move on. Not sure with mine, but I think he might be prepared to, if he's been prepared to stay this far, he might still be prepared to stay. They were looking at, obviously very interested in that Pau Lopez at Espanyol, but who's now leaving Espanyol because he was unsettled by Brighton's interest, according to the report that I read in Spain. But he didn't want to come because he could see Matty Ryan be first choice. So he's off to Real Betis by the looks of it.
This report, Brian, did you write it?
No, I read it. I read it and used a little bit of it. So we'll see, I mean, what happens with that. But I would have thought Krul will go, and Nicky, I think, may well stay.
Do you think Krul will go back to the Netherlands or stick around in England?
I don't know. Somewhere. Sure. I think he might like England.
Sure.
Try and get him. Okay, well, let's look at the rest of the fence then. And there's, of course, the ageless captain. He's a graffiti victim. Well, a lot of people have actually said just how important he is to the squad as a whole. Now, I mean, you see him on a more regular basis than we do in person. I mean, do you get that impression that he does actually boss around the dressing room? I mean, I don't mean bossing around, but he actually is that calming influence.
I just look at that award he got, the Inspiration Award, where anybody could have got it, and you wonder how big an influence he is that a player ended up getting that. And then the words of Paul Barber about how they'd like him to stay long term, I think he has a massive influence. You have Liam Rossini came out in his column and said things. Yeah. I think,
and this is the man who was effectively kept out of the team by Bruno. So if he's seen saying that, and Lewis Dunk says, you know, that he likes Bruno's, you know, he leads by example. He doesn't shout a lot, but he just gives such a great example of, you know, the way he trains and the way he prepares and everything. And I think that he sets the tone, I think.
Was it the Huddersfield game where he spent a lot of the second half warming up, in inverted commas, down the touchline? And in fact, he was in constant sort of communication with players from, and also winding the crowd up a little bit. So I just think and he keeps getting these contracts. I think it's a massive, obviously a massive influence, and probably more than we know below the surface.
Well, Knockhart plays better with Bruno behind him.
That's a fact.
Duffy plays better with Bruno alongside him. Whatever Bruno does, he makes the players next to him better.
Well, there's that, and I mean, Bruno did have a dip in form. There's no question about that. And Scalotto was an able substitute. I mean, when Scalotto first was playing, I thought that he was a little bit iffy. He seemed out of position, and then had some very good games. I mean, until such time as he's absolutely flat, and he was playing very well against Arsenal. But then, you know, Bruno came in. The writing was on the wall for Scalotto after that Palace game, where he was absolutely torn a new one by Zaha. And Bruno came back in as if he'd not been away. And he was absolutely very, very good. So it's the consideration that Houghton has is not just what Bruno brings, but what it's going to be like if he's not there. Considering also, like we say, we've lost two major senior players who, while they haven't been playing, they've been a major part of that dressing room.
I think we missed Sidwell a lot. I think Sidwell was a player who could have come in at certain places and in certain games and added a bit more of a calming influence and a bit of, you know, Premier League know-how from which, you know, is perhaps an overrated thing, but I think it definitely exists. And I think that's a player that we need to think very long and hard about how we replace him, because I think a defensive midfield player has been a miss this season.
Do you think that, I mean, he could have got another contract maybe? I mean, I don't know where he's at on his fitness, but he could have possibly got another year.
The club see him, you know, every day, and they're in the best position to know. And he might just have wanted, you know, to go somewhere where he's going to play more. I have no idea, but the trouble is, you know, the way we look at it, you know, as fans and journalists, is, you know, we get sentimental about people, and we'd have loved Caldes to stay, and we'd have loved Liam Rossini to stay and Sidwell to stay, but, you know, they've got, you know, they want to keep playing as well. You know, look at what Caldes done as a player since he left. So that's obviously, you know, we're being selfish, and we'd like to have these guys around, but You know, if the club's decided they're not going to play a part, then they'll want to go somewhere where they can play.
But the fact that Sidwell's going does actually say to me that they've got a central midfield player lined up. I mean...
Well, are you saying... Like,
I've no idea who, or, you know...
You're talking about a senior figure like Sidwell, another...
I mean, therein lies an interesting point, is it's not just actually having the right players in to replace them, it's actually having the right people, you know. I mean, I'd be of the opinion, I mean, that perhaps Nick and Brian could actually help out a bit here, but I can't help feeling the club would actually forego a talent if he felt that his face didn't fit or he couldn't actually add to something off the pitch.
Chris, we've asked Chris about this at various times and he's said that talent has to come first. You know, you've got to have good players. But, you know, if possible, you want to get the whole package. So, you know, if you've got a fantastic talent, that has to be the overriding factor, you know, at the right price, you know, and in the right position. But obviously, you know, they'll consider the personalities as well. And the thing is, you know, if you've got a strong dressing room, they can possibly take, you know, a slightly iffy character in hand and, you know, sort of force them into the mould. Mm. And, of course, they have that. But you wouldn't want to bring in two or three, you know, new players who weren't, you know, on board with the whole package.
Mm. Mm. OK, well, let's look at the other fullback. I mean, Scolotto... I raved about him, didn't you? I did, and I like him, but I think if... I mean, the experiment we had against Chelsea when we went with the three at the back...
I thought that worked really well,
actually.
It was
almost null and void, isn't it? Null and void by those two early goals.
I was talking about this to someone yesterday, and I was saying it was really weird because we lost 4-0, and I came out of it really positive.
The middle hour was one of the best, you know, the best passages that we played, I think, all season.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that if you're going to do that formation, that's when you need someone like Scolotto playing, because he can actually provide that width that you're getting that. But, I mean, the three at the back was... I wouldn't have played Shane Duffy, and that would have played Hunemeyer and Goldson and Dunk as the three.
I'd have had Bruno on the right side of those three.
Yeah.
If he'd have been fit, I can't remember if he was fit at the time. He might have been a little bit fit at the time.
I think Scolotto was...
Not three out and out.
But I mean, it was
big centre backs.
Duffy had a poor game that day, and Goldson and Dunk looked very, very comfortable that day, and Duffy looked almost a bit lost, as if say, you know, he's got someone playing too close to him, where he's got to sort of spread out.
It's an interesting thing. I mean, what Brian says, that I mean, if you're going to play three, then you can't play three identical sort of lampposts there who are there to head the ball. You've got to have a bit of pace in the centre of that team. We don't actually have a pacey central defender. I'm thinking about Ake at Bournemouth, someone like that. You know, if we managed to get Joe Gomez on loan or something, that would might have given us, you know, another option there.
Well, Goldson's no slouch, is he?
No, but he was playing on the right. I think the fastest centre back in that situation has to play in the centre,
right,
because they have to cover both sides and, you know, the long through ball. And you know, I think part of the reason we play very deep, and you know, the back four tends to be on its own 18-yard line, is because we haven't really got the pace in the centre of the back four to you know, for the ball hit over the back. So if you want to press high, you know, you've got to be aware of that risk of the ball played over the top. And it may be that Chris has decided that neither Dunk or Duffy are fast enough on the turn to do that.
Well, I've seen Yogurt turn quicker than those two sometimes. Yeah.
Okay, at the beginning of the season, then we had Marcus Suttner and Gaetan Bong having a bit of a job share.
Suttner didn't let us down. For the fact that it was Bong's, it ended up being Bong's gig. I thought Suttner did very well. I mean, his crossing was pretty good.
Again, pace is an issue, though. Perhaps
I was right. I don't know quite what he was doing with the first Chelsea goal. I was right level with that in my seat in the East End upper, and I just thought, you know, no, you've got to cut that out. I think if you could get if Bong and Suttner could be somehow melded into one player, you'd have a brilliant defensive and attacking left back. But I think between, you know, they're two sides of the ideal left back. I mean, Bong for his defensive work, Suttner for his overlapping, and he can tackle a bit, but I just sometimes think, you know, he's defensively not quite as strong. But
I cannot think that Bong actually is I think it's following on from Nick's point, Bong can actually be found slightly out of position. And I think also the thing that, and it's wrong to do it, but I think also Bong is judged by the fact that sometimes the fella ahead of him, whilst they work well going forward, Izquierdo sometimes is actually guilty of not getting back sharpish enough and leaving Bong hopelessly exposed.
But I mean, looking forward to next season for a second, I mean, do you think we actually need two new fullbacks?
Two? No.
If you could get someone like Liam Rossignol, who can play on both sides, yeah, but, you know, a 21-year-old Liam Rossignol. Because, I mean, you know, Bruno is... 38, and Scalotto, there are question marks about his defending. So I think certainly a young, very fast, very versatile right back would be a brilliant signing. where are they?
Dale Stevens. But I mean, again, Gaetan Bong, he's solid but not spectacular.
I was quite impressed with Gaetan because he had his replacement signed for him essentially, and he's come back and won the place back. I mean, especially at Bunny, he had a very bad last week of the season, fair enough. But certainly it's at Burnley where he came through that afternoon. Of course, you can always sign better players, but I'm quite impressed with how Gaetan did this season.
Okay.
I think the point about any pre-season is that you're there to, you know, each player ought to, just as part of their development, ought to improve year on year on year. Until, I mean, they'll hit a peak, but they'll improve. So you'd like to think that actually, I mean, Chris will have he'll be having sort of probably he has had several conversations with absolutely everyone about how do I improve this player, this player, this player in the round. And the likes of Bong saying, well, this is what you're guilty of. I mean, you can tweak it during the weeks, but for the pre-season, that's where they have the massive overhaul.
But, we've talked about Lewis Dunk already. Shane Duffy, we've mentioned. But, I mean, is it a concern going forwards that this season we only had two goals from our defence and one of them was in the FA Cup?
Yeah, I mean, when the best opportunity for that is corners, and it's not as though we didn't have our fair share of corners, we certainly did, but and the number that were won by our defenders were brilliant, but they just couldn't get it on target. It was absolutely everything was done right. I mean, the only one that springs to mind where we did actually do it, I mean, you're talking about the Goldson one, you know, sort of the header into the top corner. Yeah. The only other one is the one from Duffy headed down towards Dunk, who knocked it in against Arsenal. Yeah. And that's it, isn't it? But apart from that, they are a pair of them, a pair of 50p heads.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I mean, their natural instinct as defenders is to head the ball high and a long way. And the trouble is that in the other penalty area, that's not quite what's required.
But the point is, in the Championship, they could do it for fun.
Dunk was top scorer, wasn't he, once season? He was struggling.
Duffy's never scored as many goals. He scores okay for Ireland, but can't seem to do it for us.
That's exactly the point I was going to make. Yeah. He scores plenty of goals for Ireland from corners. So, I mean, maybe it's just the quality of our set pieces.
I was just going to say, some of those headers from where we sit, it was scarcely believable that the ball wasn't nestling in the back of the net, that it was almost thought it had gone through the net or so. How you put that right, I suppose it's on the training ground, it's practice, whatever, but the delivery's very good.
Delivery's always good. And they win clean headers. I mean, they know how to lose their men.
Law of averages, you know, next season maybe, they'll get three or four each.
But they need, when absolutely, you're not scoring many goals.
And the lack of goals from midfield as well, from central midfield.
Yes.
But that's perhaps to do with formations and the fact that those two sit very deep all the time.
Well, absolutely. I mean, he's got basically four players up front, you know, the two wingers and the two forward players, who are the supposed to be the principal goal scorers. Knockhart's sort of weighed in with a couple here and there, Izquierdo with the screamers and what have you, but apart from that, it's been down to Murray and Gross. If the central midfielders, even if one of them was to move 10 yards further forward, then yes, you get a better chance. Stevens can shoot. I don't know if we've ever seen Proper have a shot, have we?
Yes, we have. Yeah. Yeah.
There was volleys, and he can get forward. The header against the
diving header. Chelsea.
First minute against Huddersfield, that great run picked out by Scalotto's pass, and that was a great example. There was other movement going on, opened things up for him.
And if he's wearing an orange shirt, that's in the back of the net.
Yeah, he's had some good chances, handful of good chances, let's say.
Two or three goals this season. But again, so you know full well that going forward, there is at least another 25 goals in this team. And yet, you know,
it is, but I mean, like you said, it is getting that goals from midfield, and I think we see Proper playing further forward in for Holland, and he's a constant goal threat, and the runs, the well timed runs from midfield, getting on to the end of things,
which he's evidently told not to do here.
I don't know, he's done it, and obviously the last goal of the season they scored was him getting well forward and keeping the ball just about off Bravo and crossing it over. So I mean, I did ask up at the Etihad Chris Hughton about that, and he said, well, it is difficult for him to get forward in a lot of these games, but it is something they encourage him to do, and he's done it without
the trouble. Is he not though getting into the same territory that Gross should be in? You can you play Proper further forward with Gross in the same team? That's what I wonder about. I think I know why. I think it's Chris has always said he favours some variety of 4-4-2. But I think if you found that defensive midfield player I would like, you know, and someone like Eric Dyer, for example, who would sit in front of the back four, perhaps take a bit of pressure off them, And can also win headers from corners in a defensive situation, then the second four, you know, the midfield four, can play further forward, and you'd get the midfield players would be closer to Murray, the wingers would be higher up the pitch. But that's obviously not a formation that Chris favours at all. So, you know, that's just I've got a dream about.
You're almost saying sign Liam Bridcut, really.
Yeah. Someone in that position. Well, no, yes, I'm saying Eric Dyer, I'm saying, because I want, you know, someone who's 6 foot two who can also add to our defensive strength. Strength from corners.
Well, therein lies the point. I mean, Dale Stevens, I mean, is 6 foot two. I think just, you know, he knows how to win the ball. His starting position for me is always very good, and I actually think he's one of our better players and criminally underrated. But sometimes he just needs to sort his passing out as well.
Okay. Well, we'll come and talk about Dale in a second. But you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. And for the last time this season, we are delighted to be brought to you in association with oldfootballshirts.com. And Phil has given us not one but two shirts of the season. So I think you know what these are. It's not a very good print of that one, but it's.
Okay, right. Okay, Brian, I'm giving you one. Nick, I'm giving you one. Nick, do you want to go first with your description?
That is a blue. That's good. Blue is good. And they sort of red to white fade. I know which shirt this is, and the sponsor's logo gives it away completely. Do I reveal my...
Yes, you can.
Yeah. Stoke City away. Yes. As worn by one of the teams that was entertainingly terrible this season and kept us up.
Yes. And Brian...
Good job, Andy Naylor's not here.
Oh. I'll have a sort of a purpley... Two sort of shades of purple in broad stripes with yellow trim, sponsored by Sport Pesa, made by Umbro. Sort of looks vaguely familiar, I'm not quite sure, is it?
Has he photoshopped the badge out?
Yes.
Okay.
It's not as easy as the Stoke one.
Is that Everton away?
Yes, it is.
I was going to say Everton, but I thought I'd
yes, it is.
No, but it was sort of dark blue.
Is that 80s printer?
I shall explain all. He goes, here you go then, your shirt of the week for your season review, he says. I looked at all the shirts worn by the Premier League sides this season and struggled to think of anything that really hit the spot. But I think these two are the best of the bunch, and I expect you'll be able to identify them, and you are correct, Phil, we did. The dark blue and purple striped shirt is the 17-18 Everton third kit made by Umbro. The shirt was a nod to the Goodison Park heritage, and the dark blue stripes are evocative of those on the first shirts worn at Goodison 125 years ago, and the heritage blue stripes are contrasted with the purple to give the shirt a more distinctive look. I don't recall them ever seeing them wear it though.
It looks purple and black on it.
The Amex, I thought.
I think they did, but. And it's going to be replaced by a new third kit next year anyway. And the royal blue shirt with the red and white bib is the 17-18 away shirt of Championship newcomers, Stoke City. I think it's a little bit different. Actually, I do like that Stoke shirt. Both of them are really, really nice. The Macron are doing, they're nailing it at the moment with these shirts. But Macron do make a bit of an effort with to make individual kits, and they wouldn't be disappointed to see the Albion have something like that. Again, I don't ever recall them seeing wearing this one, but I do recall them wearing the inverse version. It was a horrendous season for Premier League kits, and next season already seems to have a couple of decent efforts. Everton's home shirt is a bit retro, but rather good. Palace's away kit is also a bit of a doozy. Sadly for us, in the EPL, stuck with Nike and New Balance next year, it's likely to be a write-off and bland and unimaginative.
I will say for this, I mean, as someone who's kind of, if you excuse me, once again mixing my sartorial elegance here, Phil is quite an anorak when it comes to football shirts, so he does actually know all the manufacturers and the build quality and everything like that, and he's seriously unimpressed with Nike, and I think he was actually trying to persuade us to a Hummel shirt, which was kind of evidently built with three layers and imprints and a badge that you could actually probably sell on the open market.
I do like Hummels. Hummels 1986 Real Madrid was one of my favourite shirts ever.
All right,
and the classic Denmark kit.
I was about to say
the
two halves of the red with the pink on the So anyway,
and the Spurs kit as well.
I think whatever happens is that all the while we're with Nike, I think Phil's going to be sort of distinctly unimpressed with the shirt. So, but yes, if you're interested in having a look at a ridiculous number of football shirts, over 89,000 of them so far, do go to oldfootballshirts.com, and that's your weekend taken up.
No, absolutely. Okay, let's move on to the rest of this. And Dale Stevens then, the heartbeat of our midfield, I've got written down here. And he's finally getting the recognition he deserves.
Is he?
I would say so. I mean, it was that enforced absence or when he got injured that basically made you think, oh my gosh, we're really missing Dale Stevens?
Yeah, I could have told you this 3 years ago, but you know. Oh, I did. Go on then, Brian.
That's a bit of a problem in a way, isn't it? If they do miss him so much. He did have a good season. He looked quite good on the ball at times as well after that first day, one little slip up against Man City, which was probably, in a way, a little bit of a learning moment. But it was it the year when they just missed out and Stevens and Kyle played midfield every game, and when one of them didn't, it was, what are we going to do now?
Yeah.
And the season when they went up, there was, I mean, it goes back to Nick saying about Sidwell. There were options and they didn't miss one player that much, and so it's good in a way, it reflects well on Stevens, but you look at next season and you sort of hope if it isn't Stevens and Proper, it could be somebody and somebody. Or
assuming Kyle's going to stick around, this is what makes me think about having that fourth central midfielder. Now, is it someone who comes in and is good enough to replace either Stevens or Proper, or is actually going to put Kyle down into fourth place or whatever? I mean, Kyle was player of the season a couple of years ago, but he's done okay, but you know.
But look, I think part of the another part of the problem is those two, Proper and Stevens, playing almost every game and hardly ever having, you know, we hardly ever had the breathing space to take them off for 20 minutes at the end. And we had that with Stevens and Kyle, I think exactly what you were saying. There was that season where they almost had to play every minute because
they had eight more games.
Yeah. So I think, you know, you look at some of the other teams and they do rotate their midfield a little bit more than we have. I think we have actually towards the end of the season, but not always with great success. I think Kyle's performance against Tottenham was a return to the old days, you know. King Kyle was back. And you know, I think a lot of us have been looking forward to that because on his day, you know, he's as good as the other two. I mean, he's a very sort of dynamic player. And the thing about him is when he gets the ball, he looks to go forward with it.
Yes.
I think I have to admit Stevens has had a great season, and he, you know, his work was highlighted by, I think, Alan Shearer on Match of the Day after the Arsenal game.
This is the game where he actually got booked for making
a fan the best tackle of the match. Yeah, so, I think that game against Man City, you know, when Stevens gives the ball away, it's because he's played a square pass or a backwards pass. And, you know, if we want to give the ball away, I'd rather see him giving the ball away, trying, you know, an ambitious ball down the channels or something like that. I think that, you know, that there's a tendency to go square or go back sometimes, that it drives the fans near where I sit up the wall.
Yes.
And you know, the trouble is, if you're picked off there, you know, you've really given the other team some initiative. But, you know, this is all, you know, minor criticism for a guy who's had a fantastic season and is definitely up there in the reckoning for player of the season.
But when we were doing our pre-season predictions, one of the questions was, who do you think the surprise package of the season is going to be?
I never thought that Stevens would be a surprise
package. No, but I mean, I actually said Berham Kyle, because I thought that people had forgotten actually just how good he was, and the fact that when he was playing at Celtic and he was being touted big money transfers to like the likes of Liverpool, Man United, playing against Barcelona and bossing the game, he comes with a really, really good pedigree. And then when he did eventually get that run in the team towards the end of the season, there he was man of the match in every game for me. He was just absolutely driving that midfield. And I think that maybe...
So what's the surprise that you were talking about then?
Well, I was saying he was going to be a surprise package because I think people... I mean, you mentioned there, he was player of the season a couple of years ago. Last year...
He wasn't my player of the season, but
he was up there, wasn't he? Last year... I think he went above one vote or something.
Yeah.
I mean, last year it was in and out, he had lots of injury problems last year. And people have generally forgotten how good he actually is.
Well, therein lies the point, doesn't it? I mean, he wasn't missed as much as... I mean, I should say he wasn't missed. I mean, he was still an integral part of the squad, but he wasn't missed as much because we had Stevens and Sidwell who were sort of kind of driving things on. And we had a little bit of the rough and the ready with the intelligent and the calming. I mean, you know, Sidwell can be quite an animal on the pitch, but, you know, you've seen how he has been... you know, sort of intelligent and considerate, you know, the stuff off the pitch. I mean, that stuff with the Players Player Award. I mean, you can tell how relaxed he is, you know, and sort of what a sharp, sort of easygoing sort of fellow he seems to be. So, you know, again, we're back to the whole thing of making sure that a player is part of the thing. But Kyle was... That's not to say we wouldn't have gone up without Kyle, with Kyle, but Stephen, you know... he wasn't missed as much as he could have been.
Okay, well, another player that we'd forgotten just how good he was turned up towards the end of the season, and that was Anthony Knockaert.
Finally, I think it took 36 games before he turned up, didn't it? I mean, it's probably a little bit unfair, but 36 games before he actually started bossing things, because he handed Man United's defence, you know, he handed it back to them on their plate, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, Brian, I mean, the beginning of the season, I mean, he got that injury pre-season and missed quite a lot of that. I mean, do you think, I mean, that was a part of his malaise early doors?
It's not going to help, is it? And also, the same with Kyle, I was just about to say before. Remember, he was had to took a while to get up and running because of his injury. So, again, he'll be better placed this coming season. I spoke to Knockaert after the game at Anfield. He said it was like a really tiring, demanding season. He found it really tough going with eight fewer games than what they played in the Premier League. But you said, I mean, back to Bruno again, but he said he's the one who he thinks is going to just come alive next season. It's hard because he's the one who's supposed to have got to win games, make the difference. He's the one who people are looking to. But there were signs of Man United in the first half at Man City. Mm-hmm. And then he sort of switched off defensively on the third goal that Man City scored. So, but hopefully, I mean, because they need that. They need those moments, those just 2 or 3 seconds of inspiration.
But it just seems that sending off at Everton did him the world of good, because he came back a complete refreshed and revitalised and hungry again.
He needed a bit of time watching the team play and thinking, I should be out there and this is what I'd be doing. And I remember once, going a long way back, Peter Ward was dropped, and he said he found watching the team play without him very, very instructive, and thought about it a whole different way when he came back, and possibly that's the thing. I think that missing a chunk of pre-season, all pros say that's very important to get a full pre-season inside you. And then, of course, you know, felt he had to prove something. He'd been Championship Player of the Year and, you know, up against much smarter and better and more athletic defenders. It took a while to get going, but I think he's also a very emotional player. You know, he's the player who needs the arm round him from the manager most of all, and, you know, perhaps a more of a complex character to deal with, you know, rather than just sort of putting a shirt on him and sending him out there.
Hit the inside of the post, didn't he, at Watford? If that had gone in, maybe again that would have set him up and running. But the last goal
I'm surprised he had any legs left after that Watford game, to be honest.
But the goal he scored against Swansea was fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, took it on his right, put it in with the outside of his left.
Mm.
And, you know, the signs there, you know, the signs that he was coming back, and the old knockout was still there.
And you also saw, 5 minutes from the end, when Robertson scored the last goal of the season against Brighton, and he was there running himself ragged.
It was Dunk.
Was it? Not again. He was there running himself and trying to blocked the cross, and, you know, still putting it all in at that moment. So I mean, you can't knock that either.
Talking of having legs left, can I actually just put in a bit, very very quick and brief pause here, that 7th to the 10th of June, Albion Community are having a fundraising cycle ride from Brussels to Cologne. If anyone is taking part, please sponsor them, but I'm going to specifically sort of shout out to my sister Sarah Hallett, who's going to be taking part. They go off to Brussels on the 7th of June. It's a 170 mile cycle ride from Brussels to Cologne, and if you'd like to sponsor my lovely sister, please just go to justgiving.com/fundraising/Brussels to Cologne. You'll find that her and her friend are actually sort of fundraising together. They still need a few quid, because if they don't actually raise it themselves, they have to come out. It has to come out of their pocket. So please help them do that. justgiving.com/fundraising/Brussels to Cologne. Please sponsor my lovely sister.
Or Guy Butters, or anyone else.
Yeah, but I'm putting this down for my sister today, okay?
Okay, so Solly March, I mentioned him earlier.
Started brilliantly, then just became the daffodil that he is. You know, when it comes to harsh weather, he reminds me of Paul Brooker.
The West Brom game might have been his greatest game in an Albion shirt. Created the first goal, and then had a fantastic second half as an auxiliary left back.
Mm.
And I just wonder whether that's his best position.
He does do very well at left back.
Wing back. Yeah. I just think he needed to be able to take people on with a bit more confidence. I mean, he does seem to lose a little bit of spark.
His stats aren't great, to be fair. I mean, it was...
Stat schmats.
18 starts, 1 goal and only 1 assist.
Headed goal?
Well, so he didn't get the goal at home to Huddersfield then, because that was allegedly
no,
goal,
it wasn't
that
his.
Was a shot on
no,
target.
No,
did they not?
So no, the only one was Bournemouth. Bournemouth, yeah.
All right, but having said that, I mean, don't forget, I mean, Knockhart only had one. Yeah, I think his first one was something later in the season, or even the season we won. The Knockhart's first one was at Christmas. So yeah,
Joe Shelvey had terrible stats actually when it came to scoring, creating goals, and people were talking about him for the England squad.
Well,
so.
Quite. So
you I mean, can prove I'm, anything with facts.
Knockhart only had one assist as well.
Yeah, well, there you go. I mean, you know, Lewis Dunk probably didn't have too many assists either, and so on and so forth. And like I say, it's yeah, you can prove anything with
one.
Those. Well, there you go. So. Solly Much, he was reasonable when he came on as a substitute. I mean, it's interesting at your point, if we do go revert to a back five, that Solly Much would be your fella on the left there. Because, I mean, he does put in a shift defensively. I've got no problem with that, in ways that, sorry, Esquerdo sometimes needs to buck his ideas up.
OK, well, let's talk about Jose. I mean, he scored the goal of the season. Probably three of them, actually. And it wasn't the one that got voted goal of the season for me. But
OK, well, which one is your favourite then, Brian?
My favourite was Stoke. It was his favourite. But when I spoke to him after the awards night, he said it wasn't in a win. The West Ham was in a win. And as mentioned earlier, it might have been their most important goal of the season. He thought it was their most important goal of the season, to put them back ahead when they needed a win. And it kick-started that match. It kick-started a little run and it took them away. Because when they'd been to Southampton, I think, was it the game before? Mm-hmm. They were really close to dropping into the bottom three. Mm. And the results went their way and they got a point, so they didn't. And then they got pegged back. A really good goal by Hernandez as well in that game. Mm. And he thought that was the most important. He thought Stoke was the best. I'd agree with him. I also think the one at Palace was probably the most underrated because it was a really good goal, but you're not going to get an award for scoring in a defeat at Crystal Palace. It was a really...
To be honest, it was the only good goal of that
game. Yeah, it was. Lovely bit of work by Lacardi as well. Yeah, just a little bit of... So, he just has that, like I said earlier, amongst the 90 minutes of discipline and running and organisation, etc., those seconds of absolute genius. Brilliance you need in these games.
Well, it becomes almost like the metronome for the way we play. I mean, when he's in the team...
Metronome or barometer?
Metronome, because he dictates the speed of how we play. When it goes to him, the speed of play picks up, and it's a joy to watch when he's on fire, but he does disappear quite a lot.
He's on the verge of being a really big player in the Premier League, but he's just not there.
Well,
I think
me the most significant things were the goals that he set up against Swansea and the winner against Manchester United, because he got him on his left foot.
Yes. Mm.
And for once, you know, I think the thing about Esquerdo, that for a while he was so predictable. You know, he charged down the left wing for 20, 25 yards, stop, lose all momentum, come in on his right foot, which he wants to do, and then go in. Sometimes that worked, you know, spectacularly so, you know, on a couple of occasions. But I think that when he added to his game, you know, the ability to go out on the outside, and then, of course, suddenly he's not predictable. And, you know, the 1-2 he played with Gross for Murray's goal against Swansea, wasn't it? And then, you know, getting to the byline and, you know, trying again. He tried to get a cross in, it was blocked. He got the second cross in and we scored the winner against Manchester United. Mm. I think that's shown that, you know, he's taken that on board and added that to his game. And, you know, a winger who can only come inside, you know, is a very easy thing for a fullback to deal with. But somebody, when you never know which way he's going to go.
Well, he did also against Arsenal as well. Mm. But for the about, sort of, you know, 6 inches, it was offside. Yeah, and, you know, it's very similar to the Swansea goal.
Yeah. Okay. And was that little period when they were playing those little triangles, him, Gross and Murray, weren't those like?
Yes.
The Swansea
unplayable,
goal.
Unplayable, yeah.
Okay. Moving on then. Pascal Gross, player of the season. There's not much else we can really say about him that hasn't already been said, really, is there?
Yeah, except he wasn't my player of the season.
Yeah, but you just want to be different.
No, I'm not the only one to not. I mean, when we've done a list of everyone that's been on the Albion Wall this season, and not everyone's. We've asked everyone who's been on this season who their top three were, and not everyone chose Pascal Gross. I mean, nearly everyone put Pascal Gross in their top three. But first to say that, yes, the Albion Royal Player of the Season is Pascal Gross.
To get a player who can score goals, create goals for £3 million is just an unbelievable piece of business. And, you know, I think that, frankly, the recruitment department has absolutely covered themselves in glory this season when you look at what we've spent and what we've got.
Yeah, I mean, there's not been a dud, really, has there? So
I can't think of one, no. Not for those that have actually been brought in as first-team players. And obviously, they buy a lot of players in for the development of the under-23.
I mean, there was one report that was suggesting that Stutner was the least...
No.
But then he's had the least game time.
If he's made Bond play like that... Yeah. Then, you know, I think the £14 million we spent on Jurgen Lacardia made Glenn Murray into a £14 million player for about 3 or 4 weeks.
And then, I mean, Izzy Brown as well came in, didn't really do an awful lot.
He was online,
really.
So,
and he just looked like he was starting to jump in the fire when he got that injury. But
absolutely. We, who knows? We might actually sort of grab him again next season. Suffice to say, Lewis Dunk was second and Matty Ryan was third in our our Albion Royal Guests Player of the Season.
And where was the new man for the advert for the Advanced Hair Studio?
Mr. Murray. Yes.
Nowhere.
I think I might have put him third.
I think a few people did. Naturally, our good friend Mark was put in top.
A lot of people felt that he just wasn't going to be able to do it in the Premier League. But you know, he knows where the ball's going to come. Mm. You know that, and sometimes, as he said to me in a rather good book that was published at the beginning of the season.
You know, have you got a book?
Sometimes the artist, you know, sometimes you're not going to be afraid to look lazy by just standing still and waiting for the game to come to you. And this goal against Swansea. Basically, just stood where he was, let his marker run towards the ball, and then put the ball in when it arrived at him.
With his knee.
Well, I mean, he did finish top scorer, and don't forget, he didn't start the season as first choice. Tomer Hemed was at the time.
Wasn't Murray injured at the time?
He'd been sent off, hadn't he, in a pre-season game, so he got banned out of the last friendly.
Oh, right.
I don't remember any.
Certainly,
injury,
I mean, Hemed scored the third goal against West Brom, we forget that, don't we?
Yeah. So, and that was set up the second one. His assist for Gross's second goal was fantastic.
Absolutely. And the winner, and Hemed got the winner against Newcastle as well.
There you go.
He couldn't get his place back after that suspension.
Yes.
And he's probably played his last game for the club, I'd imagine.
I think so.
Well, I mean, do you know the whisper as to whether Hemed's? I think he's got another year to go, hasn't he?
Well, he signed a new 3-year deal, 2-year deal.
I have a feeling
he'll be playing elsewhere next season, either in the Championship or perhaps abroad. Mm.
I'm right.
But also another player that came in was Jurgen Lacazette. I mean, Chris saying he's one for next season.
Is he though? I mean, what's this thing that people saying that he himself has admitted he can't head it? Now, that's a little bit worrying for a centre-forward.
Well, he says he doesn't like playing as a single striker up front. He prefers to play coming in off the left. Well, we've got a player who does that. Or behind a forward. Well, we've got a player who does that. So where exactly he plays, I don't know. But I'm sure Chris has a plan.
Well, I mean, if he's saying that, I mean, that he's going to be more of a focal point for next year. I mean, that means Chris may be looking at the way that we set up, perhaps.
Well, I'll put it this way, playing him at Liverpool with the nearest Albion player 40 yards away from him is not going to tell you anything about
him. But could that be good news for someone like Sam Baldock, maybe, who's still under contract?
I can't see. I mean, there would be. Sam has had every opportunity this season. He's been fully fit. He's had every opportunity to play for us, and yet sometimes he hasn't even made the bench, let alone got onto the pitch. So I cannot think the writing was on the wall for Sam, because, you know, again, where would you put Sam? You know, someone who plays on the left, which is what he's been doing. He's not the lead striker. If anything, you know, Lacazette, by the sounds of things, is more a Sam Baldock type player, and he's the one who's making it to the bench. So I don't know. We say this. I mean, every time we do a show at the beginning of the season, we make our wild, sort of ridiculous predictions. Have you got a copy of that, by the way? Have you had a look see who's done what? Yeah, we'll put it on social medias to see how ridiculous our predictions were. But Baldock is actually sort of, you know, he's going further and further back in the pecking order, isn't he?
Brian?
I think he's really disappointed with how the season's gone. He thinks he's given it all. He's been fit. He thinks he's trained well. Stated his case as much as he can, and it hasn't happened for him. I think he just wants to draw a line onto this, and I'd be surprised if he's still here.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame because, I mean, Sam is one of those players that when he's playing, he makes other players look better by how unselfless he is. Mm. And he's a player I really, really rate, and I think I'd like to see him get more of an opportunity, because I think that he could do it at this level.
I think he thinks that.
I'm sure he does. And, you know, there's a good chance that, given a run in the team, he probably would do quite well. But it's not a case of being given a chance. You have to earn it.
Well,
and
also, when you're going to get a run in the team, you know, if you're fighting against relegation, if you're safe with 6 games to go, fine. You know, give him 3 games to get a run in the team. But we haven't had that luxury.
Yeah.
Okay, so, I mean, looking ahead to next year, then, we've got 5 minutes left. What do we need? I mean, I'm guessing our target again is to finish at least 17th or higher.
I think whatever we do, we have to progress. The whole point of Chris's raison d'etre is that we will forever be improving. Now, it's not to say that we're actually going to be challenging for a Europa League spot, but we'd like to think that, as Nick just said, before he dies, we'll be safe with, say, half a dozen games to go. In which case, then we can sort of look forward to the next season. So whatever happens, I would expect to see improvement in wherever that might be.
Nick? Brian?
I think a bit, some more joy away from home would be really nice. How that works out, I don't know. But it's been a grueling sort of experience going away and watching. And I think of the people who pay their money and, you know, do it as a hobby on their day off.
Yeah.
I think that there's bound to be activity in the summer.
Well, Chris has actually said that. He said we've been decent at home, and next season it is to get more points on the road.
And I think for fans to keep this first season feeling, if they can, and not get stale with it, as happens at some clubs.
I want our analysts to look at some games and find out why it was we could play quite well against Manchester United three times, we couldn't play well against Huddersfield.
Why is it
we could play well? Well, we played well against them at home. Why is it that we didn't seem to have much of a problem? We played quite well against Tottenham. But, you know, Liverpool, Manchester City tore us to shreds. Well, OK, they tore us, other teams to shreds. But, you know, some of the top six teams didn't. Burnley, we didn't. We played well against. What's actually happening there? So, you know, what is it? How is it that we set up against them? Is there something we can do against those other teams to stop ourselves being overrun and being under such constant pressure? So I think perhaps there's stuff to be done off the field there. And perhaps, you know, it's a tweak of formation. We need another type of player. Going back to my defensive midfield player. Why is it that Huddersfield could get draws at Chelsea and Manchester City? And I can't see any way that our personnel could have done that. I don't think we have the personnel at the moment to get those sort of results. So perhaps, you know, recruitment and a bit of analysis to have a look at that.
Okay. Okay. What do you think, though, AD?
Well, I just agree with that. I mean, basically, we do need to be a little bit more proactive away from home. I mean, I can see that it was this season. It was like, okay, be good at home. Try to get as many points on board at home as possible. And try and get at least a point away, but I think we should be trying to get 3 points away, and if you can't get 3 points, get 1 point. But yeah, I don't think we were going into a game away from home trying to win them as much as we possibly should have been. Stoke was a classic example. We should have been 4-0 up before they even equalised. So. But that is it. That is all we've got time for this season. So many thanks to everyone for listening. We'll be back during the summer with some World Cup shows. And thank you, of course, to Phil Shelley from oldfootballshirts.com for your brilliant support. Thanks to Al. Thank you to Nick Schapanik. Thank you to Brian Owen. I've been AD Packham. This has been the Albion Draw. Enjoy your summer, and we'll see you again next season.